Welcome back to the story of Esther. Now, as Grandfather turns the page to Chapter 3, you can feel a change. The adults get quiet, even the little ones sense it, a somber tone. The events of Chapter 3 will lead us to a place we did not want to go. But life does that, and ready or not, the chapter begins at verse 1. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. So a new character walks onto the scene, a man of power and influence. Haman is honored by the king himself, and there at the king's gate, where powerful men crossed paths, everyone bowed to Haman. Everyone but Mordecai. Why does Mordecai refuse to kneel? The only clue given here is that Haman is an Agagite. Agag was the name of several Amalekite kings. The Amalekites were descendants of Esau and bitter enemies of Israel. You may recall that God commanded King Saul to destroy the wicked Amalekites, but Saul left King Agag alive. Is Haman a descendant to that line of kings? Is Mordecai aware of this ancient animosity? We don't know for sure. Verse 3. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. Now here's a twist. Mordecai, who forbade Esther to reveal her family identity, told them he's a Jew. Is it a double standard, or just fatherly protection? Whatever the case, his Jewishness is clearly at issue here. Verse 5. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. It's been said, you can tell the size of a person's character by the size of what bothers them. When small offenses lead to large retaliations, there's an ego in play. Egos always exaggerate injuries. Haman is enraged. And in verse 6, yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. Pause for a moment to take in the scope of Haman's rage. For the sake of one disrespect from one man, his mind has set itself on plotting the murder of every Jew in the kingdom, a kingdom that stretches across the known world. Haman is a bloodthirsty and powerful man, and he wants the Jews dead. His goal is nothing less than genocide. Is this the ancient rivalry of Agag and Saul reignited, or are there spiritual powers at work, with their demonic wars spilling over into human affairs? The text doesn't say. But verse 7 takes us to the 12th year of Xerxes' reign. Esther has been queen for over 4 years now. And take a look at verse 7. In the first month, the month of Nisan, the poor, that is, the lot, was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar. Did we just read that? Haman wants to select a date for his genocidal plot, so he asks his servants to cast a lot. A lot. Casting a lot is basically throwing dice. Pagans used it to seek direction from their gods, or simply to let fate decide a matter. But this fate, everything about this moment just feels so cruel and callous. What day should we murder every grandmother? Toss the dice to decide. What day should we slaughter every child? Leave it to chance. Fate is a callous story writer. And as we look to Granddad for signs of hope, the penny drops that this story commemorates Purim. That's the plural of poor. It just means dice. Is that all this is? A remembrance of the cruelties of chance? that life is no more than a series of unfortunate events? But this story is real, and so is life. And life can feel so callous when trauma strikes and we just can't stop revisiting the chance events that all led up to that terrible event. And again we ask, where is God? Is he hiding? Has he abandoned us? Abandoned us to chance? The question looms large. There is a proverb, a Jewish proverb no less, that says, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. Well, where is the Lord in this decision? Where is God? One small concession, at least the date is 11 months away. But what good is 11 months of fear and impending doom? Verse 8. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, there is a certain people dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom who keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all other people, and they do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. Haman's plea is laced with the language of hatred and intolerance. Certain people, separate, with different customs. And then the ego attack. They don't obey you, king. It's not in your best interest. Do not tolerate them. Verse 9. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will give 10,000 talents of silver to the king's administrators for the royal treasury. After all his reasoning, Haman just offers money. Now, a talent is about 38 kilos of silver. That was nearly 20 years' wages for a common worker. 10,000 of those is in the $100 million range today. Haman is rich, but he's willing to part with some of that wealth to buy vengeance. And in verse 10, so the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Keep the money, the king said to Haman, and do with the people as you please. And that's it. The king agrees. Haman didn't even tell him what people it is he's killing, and Xerxes doesn't care. It's just people, other people. Will God stop him? God hasn't shown up yet. Not that we can see, anyway. In verse 12, the royal secretaries are summoned, and the edict is issued to every province in the kingdom. These were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring. Dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children, on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of the text of the edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality, so they would be ready for that day. The couriers went out, spurred on by the king's command, and the edict was issued at the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. And with that fitting word, the chapter closes. The edict is out. The people are bewildered. What is this command? And look at the day the edict was issued. It's the 13th of Nisan, 2 days before Passover. Every Jew spread across the empire, even in Jerusalem, as they gather to commemorate the day that death passed over, the day that the Lord intervened to rescue them from their oppressors. In the midst of that very celebration, they will hear this edict: destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children. So where is the Lord now? Has he abandoned his people? Has he forgotten his covenant? Or have they violated that covenant beyond repair? As I read passages like this, and as I look around at the vengeance and intolerance that fuels so many conflicts today, my own heart echoes often the words of King Theoden in Lord of the Rings. So much death. What can men do against such reckless hate? And what about today? What should we do when our thoughts drift from this story to the conflicts of our time? There are many common threads here. Racism, anti-Semitism, colonial powers unaware of how their callous and careless decisions fuel ancient feuds. It's tempting to connect those dots. But be careful, lest we be guilty of the same carelessness as Xerxes, or worse, the same intolerance. If we learn one thing from Xerxes, decisions made in ignorance are dangerous, and listening to just one man's perspective can be deadly. I'll reflect more about those connections and how to approach modern conflicts on the B-side. For now, focus here in the story. Read Esther 3 and consider, is God here? In the midst of hatred, cruelty, and chance, is God present? Where are you, Lord? We need you now.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.